Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
And there is that dude that covers the Brewers for Brewers.com, MLB.com, and us right here on The Fan, Adam McAlvey on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. How are you this afternoon, Adam? Busier than you probably thought you'd be today?
Yeah, that's all right. Anybody want to be the next hitting coach of the Milwaukee Brewers?
I would love to do it. How much they paying, cuz?
I'd back you for that. It's a hard job because you only get one of those jobs. It's like the middle reliever of I think third base coach is the same way. You never get credit when a guy's good. When a guy's good, it's the guy. When a guy is bad, when a team strikes out a bunch, when they don't, you know, when they strike out with runners in scoring position, it's the coach. So that's a very thankless job in Major League Baseball.
And Adam, I was saying before, for all the things that frustrate Brewers fans about this Brewers lineup, and I know how good this season was, and most Brewers fans are very happy with how the season went. So I don't want to make it sound like all hell broke loose this season and Brewers fans were just, you know, upset over everything that happened. But the complaint that we heard more than any when the Brewers would run into those stretches where they couldn't score runs was more small ball, more station to station baseball, less of the home run or bust mentality. But that's not a Brewers thing. That's a Major League Baseball thing nowadays. And B, that's more about roster construction than it is about a hitting coach. You can't expect a hitting coach to change the DNA of a team, can you?
No, I totally agree. Certainly Darnell Coles did what he could do in those areas, and there was a realization that, you know, putting the ball in play with a man on third and less than two outs is critical to having success in baseball. And you know, they worked on that and they tried and they did what they could do in terms of putting the work in before games. And then it's on the hitter to execute. And I think you're right that it's a thankless job because you can't necessarily change who hitters are. We are seeing throughout Major League Baseball this emphasis on home runs. Strikeouts are not frowned upon. You know, that's a process that's been ongoing for many years now, where the strikeout first was years and years ago, it was a source of great shame. It's not that way anymore. Guys are willing to trade strikeouts for power production, and a lot of players are getting very rich in this game and getting great jobs and long-term deals by making that trade. So it's a difficult balancing act, I think, for a hitting coach, because you still need to do those little things to win games. You cannot win every game on a three-run homer, but how you coach that into players who aren't necessarily built that way is a very difficult thing. The other thing that I'll say is with some teams, there's always been some involvement from the front office in, coaching issues. I get the sense that that's more the case now because the front offices are just so much bigger, and there's analysts that are dissecting these numbers 16 different ways and coming up with something different. And how often did we hear Ryan Braun, for example, this year talk about how, you know, his expected on base, expected slugging based on the advanced stats. This stuff was brought to him, and that was brought to him by members of the front office in some cases. So I think you're also balancing as a hitting coach the involvement of kind of more voices. The players are hearing from more people in the organization. And I think that can sometimes be a difficult thing. I don't know if that was involved in Darnell Cole's decision to tell Craig Counsell and David Stearns after game seven that he wanted a different challenge. But I just think in general for coaches, that's something that you have to be able to, sort of work with.
So somebody needs to explain to me how Lee Tunnell doesn't get renewed.
Well, yeah.
I mean, as a bullpen coach, I was the strongest part of the whole deal was that. But is this a deal, too, where maybe Lee didn't agree with how they were using the bullpen and how they were going about things? Or maybe there was a difference of opinion? Or what happened?
Maybe. Or maybe they just want a different kind of coach in that position. Lee Tunnell is an old-school baseball guy. You know, I've pitched in the big leagues for a long time. And perhaps they just want, you know, what David Stern says is sometimes it's you want a fresh voice on your staff. And they have not made any changes. I think that's notable that when David Stern came in, he made zero changes. You know, he stuck with the coaches, and this is the first time they've had change. So I can't tell you specifically what the issue there was. The bullpen coach is also a tricky position to sort of talk about because it sounds like they're the guys, like as the pitching coaches to the starting pitchers, the bullpen coaches to the relief pitchers, and it's not really the case. The pitching coach is the guy who's really the pitching coach for the relievers, and the bullpen coach is, you know, their responsibilities are during games, getting players ready for situations, getting them warmed up, obviously communicating with the bench, logging all of the work that guys put in out in the bullpen that you know, doesn't happen on the game mound. There's a lot of other parts of that job, but I think it's a little bit of a, you know, while Lee Tunnell certainly deserves some credit, and David Stern said this, for the success that the bullpen has, it's not like, you know, Derek Johnson's efforts were on the starting pitchers and Lee Tunnell's were on the relievers. It's a little bit of a, I think, a mischaracterization of how it works.
Yeah, I got two quick ones. First of all, can you, because I missed it. When you guys asked, I'm not sure who asked him, but when you asked counsel about Hader coming in early, I'm sorry, I'm behind a little bit on that. Adam, what was his thinking with that?
Well, I think the plan was in a game, in a do or die game like that, you don't save your bullets. You use your best players when the game calls for it. And in that case, they needed outs. And they brought in their best pitcher to get outs, and he gave them 9 outs. And I think it was, you know, if you watch the radar gun, the velo dipped. I mean, it was sort of a little show of why they put Josh Hader in this role that they put him in, where he can go in and air it out for maybe 2 innings, sometimes 3. Because the stuff changes as he starts to get up in pitch count, and it's not the same. And that's, I think, the reason why he's not going to go back to being a starting pitcher. He's staying in the bullpen. So I think the idea was in that type of a game, you are just trying to get as many outs as you can, give your offense a chance to score some runs, and that's why they went with Josh Hader at that time. Now, that, to me, is a little incongruent than with you.
Incongruent? That's a nice one.
With using Jonathan Scope as your first pinch hitter off the bench, and I was wondering if counsel might, you know, I asked him kind of an open-ended question about did he just a couple of days later have any second guesses about the way that game went. And he did say it was, you know, possibly you could talk about using the guys in a different order, the pinch hitters. But, you know, it would seem to me like when Scope batted, it was 2 on, you know, pretty good scoring opportunity very early in the game. But if you're going to just sort of empty your, you know, your chamber of your best players in the positions as they, you know, the spots as they come up, it probably would have been Domingo Santana in that spot. But, you know, that's the kind of second guessing that we can do all winter.
Yeah, real quick, my other one was the Golden Glove. Now, Manny Pena, okay, Lorenzo Cain and Yelich, okay. But I was thrilled to see Travis Shaw, I mean, moving to second base, you know, people forgot about it, even play some first base. I mean, is Gold Glove a big deal for the guys? Do they care about winning awards like this, or is it not that big of a deal?
No, I think it's a big deal, Roy, because the best part about the Gold Glove is you get the glove, the Rawlings glove.
Right.
You get the gold, the little wrist, the patch on the wrist. Is gold, and Yelich has one of those from winning it in Miami. So you get to show off that you're a gold glover 162 games a year.
Wow.
And that makes it a big deal for guys. And look, there's a statistical element to that now where it used to be, I think it was coaches always voted on that, managers and coaches, and it kind of became a hitting award. You know, it was like the best hitter who could also pick it a little bit. Now they're trying to do more advanced stats and try to come up with a better representation of who are actually the best fielders. And you can debate whether there's still an offensive element to this. I think that's possible. But I think Travis Shaw gets credit for some of the stuff he did, you know, what the metrics said he did. He shouldn't, I don't think, get extra credit for moving to second base, although that doesn't hurt because that was certainly a part of the story of his defensive season, is going to a totally new position and making it work. There was one game at Wrigley where he got exposed for his range and it hurt him, but I'd have a hard time coming up with many other games where that hurt them. And it's a big deal now because it opens them up if they want to look at adding a bat. You know, if they think Jonathan Scope is just not going to work, you can either look at a second baseman or you can think of Travis Shaw as your second baseman and go see what you like at third. So I think it just opens options a little bit. Now, that none of that has anything to do with whether he'll win the Gold Glove Award, but certainly his defense was, you know, a pretty significant story of this season.
Talking with our Milwaukee baseball insider, Adam McAlvey, here on the Wendy's Big Show. We talked about two of the three changes that were made today, Darnell Coles and then Lee Tunnell, the hitting and bullpen coach, respectively. The third change that they made was head athletic trainer Dan Wright. Do you have any idea what's behind that, Adam? Because, I mean, injuries weren't a huge problem for this team this year, where somebody might point a finger at the head athletic trainer.
Yeah, no, and look, I don't. And that's the kind of thing, I don't know that we're going to get, like, very clear answers on that. They have their whole, you know, medical, their whole, that whole department is such a complex part of the organization under Roger Kaplinger and Dr. Rosh. And I don't know that we're going to get...
It had nothing to do with Jimmy Nelson not coming back this year, right?
I would be very skeptical that one guy, you know, coming back from a shoulder injury that involved three different repairs and was going to be tricky no matter what, would have dictated that decision. So, I think it's David Stearns, when he came in, he kept a lot of the organization intact. And I think it's probably one of the reasons that they got good again quickly, is he kept all this organizational knowledge in place and allowed them to make decisions, you know, whether it's medical decisions, pitching decisions, whatever, based on the knowledge of people who had been there and watched these players come up through the system. So I think it's been a strength of the system. I also think it's natural that at some point where you think there are areas where you can find someone that better fits your system, and for David Stearns, that's definitely, you know, a data-driven system, you eventually at some point along the line make some changes. And I think that, if anything, if I could give like my, you know, 30,000 foot view of why these changes happen, I think that's probably it. After 3 years, it's not totally surprising to see a GM with very strong beliefs start to make a couple of changes and bring in some people that align with his way of thinking about different things.
Talking with Adam McAlvey here on the Wendy's Big Show on 105.7 FM, The Fan. The other thing about this is, when we talk about this Brewers team, they have decisions, obviously, to make this offseason, and Stearns really wasn't willing to go into too much of anything at his press conference. But just your gut feeling on some of these guys, three guys in particular. Soria, do you think they bring him back?
No.
Scope?
Yes.
And that arbitration number is going to be what, somewhere around $10
million? Big, somewhere around 10. Now, I might be totally wrong about that, and I know there's a lot of, you know, they are clear-eyed about the fact that that trade did not work this year. Some trades work, some trades don't. That one obviously did not. And I've said, thank goodness for that home run against Madison Bumgarner, because otherwise poor Johnny Scope would go home and have just absolutely nothing to feel good about for his time in a Brewers uniform. But he won him a game there. I think that they liked him enough to make a significant trade. Luis Ortiz has injury issues. But that's a young pitcher with a live arm, and was the start of the package that they gave up. And I think if you make that investment, you know, the poker term, you're kind of pot committed to some degree, because you made that trade thinking you had scope for not 3 months, but for a season and a half. And with Dubon coming back from the injury, with Keston Hira, you know, pressing the big leagues, potentially could get up to the big leagues late next year. You know, maybe that $10 million is worth spending to give him a chance to bounce back, see if you can get some of that power production back, and if it doesn't work out, you feel like you've got some young guys coming who can help fill in that spot. My own educated guess is I would lean towards Scope returning.
Mike Moustakas, $15 million mutual option. I don't think he gets $15 million on the open market. I think if they say they want him back, I think he comes back.
See, I think he got burned in free agency last year, did not find the offer that everybody thought was going to be out there. He had another pretty solid season. I think he goes back to free agency and tries to get a multi-year deal. Because, what is he, 30?
Not sure of his age.
He's not an old geezer, but in terms of, you know, trying to land a multi-year contract, you know, to kind of set him up.
Yeah, he's 30, Adam. Yeah, he just turned 30 in September.
Yeah, I think he's going to try to get a multi-year deal somewhere. And so I think he'll, my guess, because he wouldn't really give us any hints. He just was not interested in talking about that. I'm guessing he becomes a free agent.
All right, and my other one is I just saw a piece in the Milwaukee Business Journal about how out of this world good the merchandise sales were and everything else with this Brewers postseason run, even way more so than what 2011 was for their last run. And now you look at regular season attendance for next year, probably going to top 3 million after being 2.8 this year. Is it wrong for me to assume that payroll is going to rise next year?
No, I think that would be a good assumption. I think that's a fair assumption. I think you do have to remember the investment that they're making in on the international market, number one. And then, I mean, they're spending a pretty good chunk of change on that Maryvale deal.
That's true.
So there is some pretty significant outlay. That's like $60 million they're spending on that. But I do think that there's room to invest. What they have going for them, they do have guys that are going to make raises if they keep scope. That's one. Travis Shaw is going from, you know, 500,000 to 5 million or somewhere in that neighborhood. So that's a significant increase. And they have, just generally speaking, a lot of arbitration eligible players this year, way more than I can remember. It's like 14 guys.
And they only were at 109 million, which actually was 22nd in the league. So
yeah,
they got some room.
I think that area, 100, 110, I mean, that's as high as we've seen them go.
Yes, so that's true.
That's pushing what's comfortable for the business model of this team.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, there's a lot of talk right now about they have all these young pitchers. The core of this team is back. It's generally cost controlled with some of their big main players. But every team, even the most set teams, bring in pitchers in the offseason. There's going to be some deal. They're going to make some pickup of a Wade Miley type guy who's going to have a chance to have a bounce back season because someone sees something in the numbers that they think has, you know, gives the guy a chance to be better than he was this year. And there's going to be new faces. One thing that I think is interesting, one area where I'm very curious to see if they invest, is that bullpen, because those main guys, Soria is a free agent, but those main guys are back and cost controlled and for multiple years beyond next season. And that's a good thing, but look at, there's these comps to the Royals because it's a lot of the same players partly. But that's a team that struggled for a long time, had to rebuild. They got a good core, got to the World Series in 2014, came up short. And then got back the next year. They were better the next year. And one of the additions to that team was a really good reliever in Ryan Matson. And, you know, maybe you buy some development time for the Woodruff, Burns, Peralta, Adrian Hauser group by bringing in another really good reliever, spending on that. And now you've got another guy to help cover those late innings. And you can be creative with how you fill the front innings with some of those young guys, many of whom have options and can kind of go back and down when you need a fresh arm. So I think there's an opportunity to, if you spend a little more on the pen and really kind of build a super bullpen, you've got a lot of really good choices with the guys at the front of the game, and they could have a pretty nice pitching staff.
Adam, we're up against a break, so I got to make this quick. Have I given you my idea for an 8-man rotation next year? Have we had this discussion?
No, but I like it.
Okay.
So do I.
It's essentially this. You have 8 starters on the roster. Yeah. You plot out your 5 starters for moving forward for every 5 days in 5-day chunks. You plot out your starters. And then the other 3 guys are down in the bullpen as long relievers. If somebody runs into trouble in the first, second, or third inning, you have a guy who can come in and eat up innings, and you proceed that way. I got the sense, listening to David Stearns' season-ending press conference, he and Craig Counsell's, that they may be considering something along those lines, something that's not their traditional 5-man rotation. Do you think that's in play right now, something along those lines?
Well, that's kind of why I asked it, because I sort of had the same thought. It's almost
great
like
minds.
doing what they did in the postseason on sort of a bigger scale throughout,
right.
You know, as much as you can during the regular season. Craig Counsell's point to that was, you know, because we look at it and say, boy, 8-9 starters, in, you know, that includes potentially a Jimmy Nelson. It sounds like a lot, too many guys for too few spots. And the way he turned it around, and I know you heard this the other day, was to him, and it's really disappointing. And then that guy's up in May because there's need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Counsell's point was you need 8, 9, 10 guys to navigate 162-game season. So for us to do this exercise on paper is fun, and I'm with you. It sounds like, it looks to me like there's a possibility to do that, that it'd almost be the way, not as extreme, one batter and out, but sort of a tandem system like they do in the minor leagues, in the major leagues, where you throw two really good young arms for 3 or 4 innings apiece, and then if you have a lead, you've got your back-end guys to shut it down. That sounds like something that could work a little bit. And, you know, Taylor Williams could be a guy in something like that, too. He could be a multi-inning pitcher, too. So they've got some numbers there to sort of ponder something creative like that. But, again, Craig Counsell's point was that sounds really good on paper, but then inevitably guys go down. You need, and all of a sudden this what looks like too many guys is just the right number of guys. And we learned that lesson with too many outfielders in training and too many infielders after the trade deadline, and they ended up just having exactly the right amount.
That's
we'll see.
That's exactly what I said a few days ago. That's exactly what I said a few days ago when we had this discussion, Adam, that anytime it looks like you have too much, it tends to work itself out, and it seems like that's how the Brewers operate. We'd rather have too much than too little and then let all the pieces fall where they may. Adam will be checking
lot,
in with
Adam.
You throughout the offseason as things fall in place, and you can find his work at Brewers.com, MLB.com, and on Twitter, at Adam McAlvey. Thanks for another great season out of you, Adam.
Yeah, guys. Hey, Spark, I couldn't come in today, but one of these days I'll come in.
Oh, that'd be great.
Snowy day. We'll talk some, you know, some quiet Packers week. We'll talk some baseball.
Maybe like winter meetings time? I don't want to put you on the spot here.
He's
but.
Turned me down all year. I've been trying all year. That's why he feels bad. He feels bad right now.
We'll hit you up right around winter meetings and see if we can get you in studio for an hour.
Yes, the guilt trip will work, I promise. I'll bearing gifts.
That's how we work on the Big Show. We guilt you into what we want. Thanks, Adam.
Yep.
He joined us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval process from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those in our communities since 1935.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.